Welcome back once again, episode number 282, Parish of the Patriots. I'm sitting here, I'm really getting used to, this is just random information. I'm getting used to, I wear glasses. Well, my glasses were old anyway, and they got broke. And they're trifocals. That's how you know, you see, you age, you start off with just regular glasses, then you move up to bifocals, and then you ultimately wind up with trifocals. I broke my glasses here a while back. It's expensive. Glasses is expensive. I ain't afford all that. My main problem is that I'm basically blind to things up close. Like I've got my glasses off right now. I got my laptop open and everything is basically a blur on the screen. Unless I have glasses on. I can't afford no $600 or whatever the hell they want to charge to go through all the rigmarole to get some glasses. So I go down to the dollar store and I get these $10 times two reading glasses, which I stick down on the end of my nose. I can tilt my head up and I can at least read. It's been an adjustment for me. I had to read. I'm trying to do show notes, tilt my head around, not bump the mic. Bear with me. We're having fun. We're having fun discussion. If you're new here, it's going to get more interesting than it has been here in the first 1.5 minutes. It's going to be more fun. I hope you didn't hang up. Hope you didn't close it out. This is boring. We do, if you are new here, we do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly, very roughly sometimes, the halfway mark of the show. I encourage you to stick around. I know your reaction might be, I don't need to hear all that Jesus kind of talk. It'll be fun. Give it one chance. It's just one time. Or if you just absolutely, you cannot deal with that, then I've warned you and you can just not listen. I don't care. It's your choice. But if you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It really does make a difference. I do appreciate it. I consider it a blessing from the Lord. If you get something, put something in the plate. How you do that, you look right here on the description page for the show here on Radio Albion. We got the ultimate privacy coin. We got snail mail. Got snail mail. It's easy to figure out. Anyone can do it. And it's cheap. The mining fees. Let me tell you, the mining fees for snail mail. Very reasonable. Even with the post office always raising prices. And whatnot. So with that having been said, let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, this letter contains no note. That's from Mr. T. But your note has a note. Thank you, Mr. T. Mr. T, he throws something in the plate every week, and I do appreciate it. And because he throws something in the plate every week, I understand. You feel like you got to put something down. It gets hard. I do appreciate it. Let's see. Grandpa, please use this small tithe towards your ministry as Jesus Christ and you see fit. And that's from CJ. Thank you very, very much. CJ, I do really appreciate it. And with that, we've gone completely through the listener supporter mailbag. Didn't take very long. We could just keep on rolling. Just keep on rolling. I'm recording this on Saturdays, which is my usual. I usually record this on the weekends. There are rare occasions I actually have to record it on the day it airs. I don't like doing that because then you're down to if something goes sideways and you have a problem, you got no time. You know what I'm saying? If I can record this on the weekend, if like I have computer issues or internet issues or something like that, I got several days to figure something out. When I have to record on the day of something, if everything don't work just right, show may be late. May not get a show. But I'm recording this on Saturday, and I don't know. I'm sure by now all of y'all have seen it. I don't care about the Olympics. But most of y'all don't either, probably, but y'all probably saw where they had the Olympic opening ceremony. You've seen some of the clips of this. You know, there's a lot I got to say about this. For starters, they're not even being subtle anymore, and they haven't really been subtle for a long time. People have just pretended. This Satanism, you know, if you don't factor in, why is it they feel compulsed to do these sort of things? It's like how virtually every popular pushed mainstream music artist, when you see their videos, you are virtually guaranteed you're going to get triangle symbols, one eye, that whole nonsense. Maybe, you know, Illuminati, you can call it what you want. I call it Satanism. I believe it comes down to because Satan, I'm not preaching early, but to explain this, Satan always does everything as a weird inversion of what God does. It's always some backwards, weird inversion thing. And as believers, as Christian believers, you know, we confess our faith. I believe this is Satan's version. That's why they all have to go around, show the triangle and one eye and all of that nonsense, because Satan, with his inversion, wants these people, this is them publicly confessing themselves to Satan. That way they can't take it back later. If you don't understand the spiritual aspect of these things, it's hard to understand, because you look at the satanic and the mockery and whatnot, this inversion that they do, like with this Olympic opening ceremony. You know, you have to ask yourself, well, why would they do that? I mean, nobody's really going to sit there and go, oh, wow, that's great. And a lot of people are talking about it, and most of the talk is negative. Why do they feel compelled to do that? They could have just put on an interesting show or something to highlight, I don't know, something they're proud of their country, but apparently they're not much to be proud of, maybe. But instead, they always feel this compulsion to do these things, and they're not subtle about it. Now, like I said, they really haven't been subtle for a long time, but people have had this, yeah, well, they just choose to say, oh, they're just trying to be edgy. How are they being edgy when all the rest of the recording artists are doing the exact same hand gestures and whatnot? You're getting the same thing. One picture you can see, they got a golden calf out there. I was thinking about this morning. Actually, I woke up early. I woke up at like 5 o'clock this morning, because my sleep patterns are like this. I'm guessing it's an age thing. I've gotten in this thing where I randomly wake up and then I can't go back to sleep. I lay around. Sometimes I finally go back to sleep. Sometimes I don't. I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning. One thing's going through my mind. I was thinking about this. And, you know, they have, and in one picture you can see, they have like this golden calf up here. You know, they're doing this whole weird figure on a white horse. And then, of course, the ultimate mockery of Jesus' Last Supper with trannies. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, believe it or not, I was thinking about this in the context of the Old Testament. When it's written, you know, the Israel, the actual Israel, not this thing today, but the actual ancient nation of Israel, the people of Israel, it is written, it says they provoked God to anger. Now, as a believer, I've read that my whole life and just thought, well, you know, from what we understand, they turned away from the Lord. They didn't put their faith in God anymore. They just started doing their own thing and worshiping other gods and things like that. It seems, I think we have tended to, what do I want to say, to sugarcoat that a little bit, to whitewash it. Now, we already know that when they passed their children, the firstborn, through the fire, that means they literally burned their children alive and a sacrifice to Baal, because they thought it would bring them economic prosperity. So you already, there's your first hint that it was a lot worse than, oh, they created wooden images and put them up on their shelves in their houses and said this is their God and kind of forgot about the Lord. It was a lot worse than that. What got me thinking about this is thinking about this spectacle, and then thinking when it says that the Israelites in those days provoked the Lord to anger. This is different from, oh, you know, you're just sinning and you haven't figured things out and you're still drugged down by the world. That's a whole different thing. They provoked the Lord to anger. And it occurred to me that now I have a very much better grasp of what the ancient Israelites did. You look at this opening ceremony at the Olympics. They could have chosen to done something, a whole, you know, something completely different that people might have enjoyed, but they felt the need to do this. This isn't just disrespectful. This is literally provoking the Lord to anger. There's no other. You look at this and they're doing this like, we dare you, God, to do something. We dare you. We just dare you to do something. We're going to make a mockery. We're going to just go out here and just be utterly blasphemous and disrespectful. This is provoking the Lord to anger. And you can't do that. I guess I'm kind of being preachy early. I said we have the Christian specific segment halfway through the show, and I'm being a little preachy early here. But I'm just going to tell you, you can't. That doesn't go unanswered. People did. When the ancient Israelites provoked the Lord to anger, what did he do? What did he ultimately do? He had Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, come in and push their shit in, didn't he? You know, he did. He had them come in and just completely decimate it. And they never recovered. They never recovered from it. He didn't show up and drop down fire from heaven. He didn't give them the Sodom and Gomorrah treatment. He had Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, come in and just level them. That was the end of it. Utter destruction. They provoked the Lord to anger, and that was the outcome of it. Now, again, it's not my intention to be preachy on this early, because what I actually, there's several things I wanted to get to with this. We've already covered the first part of it. The other part that I wanted to get into is, I'm so tired of these normie Christian whining responses to this sort of thing. Because, you know, like I say, a lot of people outraged about it. You read it on the internet and all these different people outraged about it. And I'm sorry. Quit being a bunch of whiny bitches. This whining response. One of the number one responses I've seen from so-called Christian believers is, well, you know, I wonder why they're not making fun of the Muslims like this. Like that is some sort of own. Oh yeah, sure, they're making fun of our beliefs. How come they're not do it to Islam then? You know, with a response like that, you're basically admitting your own fault here. When these people come out and their response to this obvious disrespect for their beliefs is, oh yeah, how come you're not disrespecting the Muslims? Well, we all know why, because the Muslims, and it's not the own that you think it is. You see, it's like virtue signaling. Oh, yeah, well, sure, you're doing that to us because, you know, we won't do anything, but you won't do it to the Muslims because you're afraid of them. That's what they're essentially saying. But they condemn themselves. Because what they're essentially admitting is the Muslims actually believe in their faith and are willing to follow through and stand up for it. And you're not. You're not. It's not the own that these normie Christian conservative types think it is to sit there and say, oh yeah, well, why don't you now do, how come you don't do it to Islam? Maybe a more imagine, if you would, because I'm trying to think how to put this. Imagine if they did this, because, you know, you've got all the athletes and all of these people attending, people in the audience, you've got the athletes, there's supposed to be a big thing. And they got the nerve to roll out Jesus' Last Supper recreated by trannies. If every Christian believer there, from athletes to the audience, got up and walked away from that en masse, guess what? That would said something, wouldn't it? You know, they create this false dilemma. You're not doing that to the Muslims because they would come and start blowing your stuff up and chopping your heads off. See, we're nice. We don't do that. We're going to sit here and take this. If every believer would have got up and walked out in disgust, every Olympic athlete, everybody in the audience would have got up and just simply walked out. What would that have said? Instead, what do? They stand there and they go on social media and whine about it. Oh my gosh, look, how dare they make fun of us. Whine about it. We're going to share this. We're going to share it on Twitter. We're going to share it on Facebook. Look at this. Look at this. How come they're not doing it to the Muslims then? Like, they wouldn't have a problem if they were doing it to the Muslims. Like, that would somehow make it right if they were doing it with the Muslims too. How come you're not making fun of them? These normie Christian conservative people will never say, how come you're not making fun of Judaism? How come you're not making fun of the Muslims? Then it would be fair. Make fun of everybody. Don't worry about everybody else. Stand up for yourself. Why are you standing there? Imagine if the Christian Olympic athletes who are Christian believers are there got up and walked out. And they said, wait, man, you can't walk out. We won't let you participate in the Olympics. Well, I don't give a shit. You're not going to make fun of my beliefs. You're not going to sit here and make a mockery of my faith. I don't care about your crappy ass Olympic games. I'm out of here. If everybody in the audience simply walked out, and they don't. They all stand there and then they all go home and they all get on social media and whine about how dare they. How dare they make fun of my beliefs? How come you're not making fun of the Muslims, huh? Huh? Because you're scared. Bragging about what? Not standing up for your beliefs the way the Muslims do? And again, you're not even like you got to get violent. If everybody would have got up and walked out of it, or if everybody in mass would have started booing and yelling. No, they sit there, they stand there, they take it. And then they go on social media and virtue signal, how come you're not making fun of the Muslims? Like that would somehow make it okay. I do. I get tired of the whining. I do. I get tired of the whining. Do something. And no, I know you don't even have to be violent about it. You know, I understand. Look, I'm... Get up and walk out. Don't tolerate it, you know? If somebody come up in my house, if I had somebody come over to visit that I thought was a friend and they came in here and they're sitting in my living room and in the middle of conversating, they start mocking my beliefs, you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, you know what? You get your stuff. You get the hell out of my house. I'm going to sit there and be polite. I'm going to say, get the hell out of my house. And you better get snapping to it or I'm going to give you a little boost out the front door. You're going to do that. Now, obviously, in public, it's not your house. But it doesn't mean you got to sit there and politely applaud, politely partake in it. Got to be nice. We got to be nice. Well, you just wait until I get home. I'm going to post this up on social media and ask why you're not doing this to the Muslims. Tired of the whining. These are the same people that when these governments, these institutions do attempt to mock Islam, and they get a less than desired reaction due to this, they'll run around. Well, you should be able to draw pictures of Muhammad in a derogatory manner. That's our values of who we are. And then they turn around when it's done to them. They whine about it. Do you not see the problem here? You know, look, I'm not Islam. I'm not Muslim. I have a lot of respect, though, for these people. I do. Now, I don't share their faith. Don't get me wrong. I don't share their faith. But I have respect for them because they do actually believe in what they believe in. Do you understand what I'm saying? You got to respect that. I don't have to share their beliefs to respect the fact that they actually follow through. They actually believe in what they believe in. Now, I don't share their faith, but I don't, how do I want to say, it doesn't lift up my beliefs to deride, to be derogatory and disrespectful to their beliefs. You see what I'm saying? I have no desire to mock Islam. I'm not going to sit here and mock Muhammad. I'm not going to call Muhammad names to these people. Why? Because that's just being disrespectful. No, I don't share. I'm not Islamic. I don't follow Islam. I'm not a Muslim. But I'm also not an asshole either. You know, I don't feel the need to make derogatory remarks or run down their beliefs. In fact, I respect them because they actually believe in what they believe in. And yet, Same people who will sit here and whine on social media because they're doing the Last Supper with trannies when they no longer make derogatory public cartoons about Muhammad. They'll sit there and whine that somehow that's unfair because those people stand up for their beliefs. You see what I'm saying? Again, I'm not saying that Christians should respond in the same manner that the Muslims do, but good night, at least get up and walk out. As soon as you see them recreating the Last Supper with trannies, as soon as you see them rolling out the golden calf and obviously putting on a satanic ritual, why in the hell are you still standing there? Get up, walk out. Good night. You stand there and partake in it. Because if you're standing there and going along with it, you're partaking in it. Doesn't matter how much you go back home and whine about it later. Anyway, isn't it funny, though, that they are? They're just not even trying to be subtle now. It's in your face. And they ain't even trying to be subtle. Everybody's just going to whine about it anyway. And nobody's asking, why do they feel the need to be in your face about it? I don't know. Maybe it's reflective. I get rolling in my head. I listen later and it's like I hear my voice pitch up like that when I get. Try not to do that. I hate it when I do that. Maybe it's reflective of, you know, the overall mindset of people. They've been conditioned by this voting thing, by this democracy thing. They always wind up, quote unquote, voting for the lesser of two evils. I've seen that so much my whole life, you know. Election season comes around. And you'll point out, it's like, well, you know, they're like, I'm voting for this guy. And you'll be like, yeah, but he believes in all this stuff that, you know, supposedly you don't believe in. You will, yeah, you're right. But that other guy's a whole lot worse. I'm voting for the lesser of two evils. As others have pointed out, it is not really a breathtaking revelation, but if you're voting for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. You're still partaking in it. Just taking a part in it. You know? You want to stand there and justify that. I voted for evil, but it was a lot less evil than that other guy. It was the best option. You know? Maybe that's part of it. People have been conditioned to vote for the lesser of two evils, and as such, they're still voting for evil. So they get conditioned. They're conditioned to go along. They've got the mindset of being okay with evil. At least it's not as bad as this other evil. Of course, it is, and it continues to get worse. Because once you decide, once you agree to go along with it, once you decide to be complacent and to just go with the flow, to just tolerate it. We got to be tolerant. Once you decide to do that, then of course, the next time, it's even more degenerate. Next time, maybe instead of a reenactment of the Last Supper with trannies, maybe they'll have the trannies actually have a literal orgy in front of everybody. And then before they go home and tweet about how outraged they are about it, they can stand there and politely clap. Maybe it's part of, maybe they're just so conditioned to go along with the quote unquote lesser of two evils. Maybe that's a part of it. Talking about the Olympics, there's a story that apparently a bunch of the trains in France got sabotaged before all this. Those people that didn't make it to the opening ceremonies, they were done a favor by whoever sabotaged the trains. I thought it was funny because Israel came out right away and was like, it was Iran, did it? Like, what the? That's their answer to everything. It's Iran did it. No evidence. You never notice the media will never say claiming without evidence. Iran did it. It's Iran. That's their answer to everything. Iran did it. That's like when they tried to float that narrative with the Trump assassination thing. They tried to say Iran did it. Iran set this up to have terrorists come over and try to assassinate Trump. Not hard to figure out where they're going with all of that. And people are still going to try to vote for the lesser two. I serve two evils. I don't know. Is it, I've talked about multiple times, you know, about how Trump's been making a deal, and it looks like he's kind of pretty much got the deal done. But, you know, you look at people, they're really caught up in that personality cult of Trump. And they're just willfully not seeing the things that, that you know, are being laid out here. You know, what he's, you know, probably going to do if he gets back in there. But he's better than the other one. I mean, do you want to vote and basically acknowledge and sign on to that system? Well, you don't want Kamala to get in there. I'm telling you, this isn't going to make any difference. You know, we see these results. Back in 2016, Trump made it a big deal about he wasn't going to accept any donor money. And now he's taken like $100 million from that Adelson woman. You know, and rumor has it, the deal with that money is that he would agree to recognize basically all of the Palestinians' land, West Bank and everything, is Israel now. You know, whether that's true or not, I mean, they want something. Somebody gives you $100 million, they're going to want something, you know. 2016 Trump is not 2024 Trump. There was a lot said about Trump being at the convention and looking kind of depressed. Well, why? Because he's had to compromise and make a deal now. It's a whole different thing. 2016, it was kind of a glitch in the system, and you could tell that by the way they freaked out about him getting in there. But ultimately, the system protected itself and didn't let him actually accomplish anything. But 2024 is a whole different deal. This isn't a glitch in the system. He's negotiated. He's made a deal. And you know, these people are just blind to it. It's in your face. Are they still on that personality cult that we're going to get Trump in there and everything's going to go back and everything's going to be better now? Even if it is obvious deals have been made and there are no deals with you, you get some of the same rhetoric, I guess, but you're not going to get what you think you're going to get. It's just... It just is what it is. I'm going to tell y'all, I ain't voting, you know. I'm not. Y'all know that. I'll make no secret about it because I'm not voting. By not voting, I'm casting a vote against the legitimacy of the system. You know, you vote, my view of it. If I were to vote, then I'm saying the system has legitimacy by partaking in it. Just as the Christian believers at the Olympic ceremony should have turned around and walked out. You see, they should have put their faith into action. They should have stood up for what they believed instead of standing there being polite and going along with it. I view voting as the same thing. I'm not going along with it. I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I've had a lifetime experience of watching that take place. And you always just get more evil, which shouldn't be surprising, but yet people somehow are surprised by that. I'm not voting for the lesser. I'm not voting for evil. Just like with the Olympic ceremony, I'm walking away. I'm not participating. I'm not going to lend legitimacy to this system. Anyway, we're going to keep going. The Christian specific segment is going to be more interesting. It's going to be better. It's going to be better than the first part. I think the first part was okay. I was really put off by that. You know, by that display. You know, make a mockery. I'm not going to sit here and whine about it. I'm going to be disgusted. I'm going to tell you, not participating. You know, not lending legitimacy. I wasn't going to watch the Olympics anyway. I don't give a shit. But I was really put off. You know, I'm really put off by it. And I'm really put off by the reaction of whining, especially this whole thing of, oh, yeah, now do it to the Muslims. Like, that would somehow make it right. Anyway, like I said, we got to get into the Christian-specific segment, which will be better, I promise. It'll be better than the first part. Not that I think the first part was bad. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And in a not so shocking turn of events this week in our Christian specific segment, we're going to be talking about Jesus and the fact that as believers, we strive in our spiritual growth to become what? We're Christians, base word, Christ. We try to be as Christ-like as possible. Sadly, what seems to be a stumbling block for so many believers, when you think about it, is they have no idea who Jesus is, do they? That we're supposed to be striving to be as Christ-like as possible. And so often I've wound up talking to believers and they're like, well, I'm struggling with, you know, this. And it's like, well, why? Well, you know, Jesus wouldn't want me. And you quickly realize that they have no idea who Jesus was. And I find that amazing because we're given really a very good account. And granted, we're not given every single detail, but we're given a very good account in the Bible of Jesus' life. We're given the information we need. Yes, I sit around when it says he went to a remote place and taught his disciples. I would love to be a fly on the wall and gotten to hear those private conversations that weren't shared, that were not given. But we're given the information we need, and we're given a very good outline of who Jesus was. And yet I find it amazing when you talk to the average believer, they have no idea. And I understand this is a failure in teaching. This is a failure because MCC has fallen in with the world and they created super pacifist hippie Jesus that says you should just be a doormat and let people walk all over you. And that's what it means to be a good person. And it's sad. I mean, it's hard enough to do this thing correctly. It is. And to be in this world and to try to be as Christ-like as we can. And yet, it's hard enough doing it correctly. And then you have people that are just doing this. They're doing the complete wrong thing and making things even more difficult for themselves. We're going to go ahead and look in our Bible because this is a good example of who Jesus was and how he handled things. And we'll get into this. We're going to look at Mark chapter 11. We're going to do verse 27. We're going to just follow it all the way out to the end of the chapter because that's almost at the end of the chapter. And it's written, and they come again to Jerusalem. And as he was walking in the temple, there come to him of the chief priests and the scribes and the elders and say unto him, by what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority to do these things? Now, Jesus is fixing to respond here, and his response is very interesting and is very unlike the response your average believer would have today. And we'll go ahead and break it down. I want to go ahead and go through reading all of this, and we'll come back and go through it piecemeal, kind of breaking it down. And Jesus answered. So they're asking him, by what authority and who gave you this authority that you're teaching these things to the people? And Jesus answered, and said unto them, I will also ask of you one question, and answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? Answer me. And they reasoned with themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say, why then did ye not believe him? But if we say of men, they feared the people, for all men counted John that he was a prophet indeed. And they answered and said unto Jesus, we cannot tell. And Jesus answering saith unto them, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. Now, as I said, we're going to go back through this because there's a whole lot we can deem from this, that we can learn from this. From everybody involved, from those who come questioning Jesus to his response. Now, we back up. They come up to Jesus and ask him. They demand to know by what authority you're doing these things and who gave you this authority. Now, his response is interesting because I think the average person, they would think, well, Jesus, I'll just tell them. Why didn't he just come out and tell them? You know, why does Jesus respond in this roundabout way instead of just telling them? My authority comes from God, from the Father. I've got that authority from him. This is how I'm doing it. Why doesn't he just come out and say so? Instead, he responds to their question with this question of his own about the baptism of John. He asks him, John's baptism, is it of God or is it of men? And what they got, I always picture these guys going over here and having a huddle up. They run over here and huddle up. Okay, look, if we say of heaven, he's going to turn around and ask why we rejected John. Why didn't we believe him? But if we say men, and they kind of look up and look around at the crowd eyeballing them, maybe a few of them already picking up stones, because people are going to get outraged if they say of men, and they may get drug out of there themselves, get the crap kicked out of them by the crowd, by the mob. Because the people, they believed John was a prophet indeed. So if they make the crowd mad, then that's going to threaten them. So they come back and answer, well, we don't know. We don't know. And of course, Jesus' response is, I'm not going to tell you. Now, when they come to Jesus and ask him by what authority, they're not asking a legitimate question. What I mean by that is they're not asking because they really want to know. So many people, like, why is it that people so often have this mindset that when someone comes up and asks you something like this in bad faith, that you're obligated to respond to them? If a similar question was posed to a Christian believer today, they would start bending over backwards and trying to explain these things. And let me help you to understand. Let me help you to understand. And they would twist themselves up in knots. And at the end of the day, nothing would be accomplished. People need to get rid of this mindset that you're obligated to answer somebody if they're coming to you. Now, there's a difference. If somebody's coming to you in good faith, If one of y'all writes to me and says, look, this part of the Bible, I don't understand it. If I have a pretty good grasp of it, I will try to give you that answer. If I don't know, I'm going to tell you, look, I don't know. There's stuff in here I don't know. God hasn't revealed everything. Look, there's stuff I don't know. Because it's better to say I don't know than to, you know, try to pull some answer out of your ass and be wrong, especially about these sorts of things. But at the same time, if somebody comes to you, I've had people ask me before, why don't you debate atheist Berg so-and-so? And my answer is always the same. Why would I want to do that? It's a waste of time, because what they're going to do is they're going to come to you and say, oh, this one Bible verse, it's my favorite Bible verse that I don't understand. This Bible verse says this here, which it doesn't. How do you defend that as a Christian? And your only response is going to be, well, you don't understand it properly. What that means in the context is this. And then they're going to mock and they're going to say, see, you're just redefining it to mean what you want it to mean, which, of course, is what they themselves are doing. And you're going to do this back and forth like that. They throw this bait out. And when you try to explain it, they say, see, you're just reinterpreting the Bible to mean whatever you want it to mean. So you're no different than all of these other so-called Christians that go out here and promote all of this other stuff that's obviously incorrect. You're all just reinterpreting it to be whatever you want it to mean. In other words, it's a complete waste of time, because somebody's not coming to you asking you a question in good faith. They're just there to argue. Likewise, these guys show up to Jesus. They're not asking him by what authority, because they're really curious. Because if he says from God, then they're going to change their ways and start following the Lord. They're looking for a way to trap him. They're looking for a way to trick him. They're looking for him to say something they can then now run around and smear him in the media. They're looking for a way that they can be outraged and virtue signal against him on social media and Facebook and Twitter or whatever the hell. In biblical time version, Twitter be the local bulletin board. Somebody writes something on a piece of paper and post up there. But it's the equivalent. They're not looking, they're not asking a good faith question. And Jesus has no obligation to give them a good faith answer, because they're not coming in good faith. They're not asking because they really want to know. And his response proves this. They're not coming asking in good faith. So as a result, he asked them a question. John's baptism, is it of God or is it of men? And as I said, they go over there, they huddle up. And, well, if we say it's of God, then he's going to say, how come you rejected it? How come you didn't believe it? But if we say it's of men, we may get drug out of here and thrown out of town by the mob. We may make the crowd angry. So they come out and they say, we don't know. Now, what's interesting of their response, and this proves that this is people acting in bad faith. You notice in their discussion, when they have their little huddle and they're asking, you know, they're debating how they should answer, the truth never factors into it with these people. These same people were dealing with John. And you notice the truth, it's not in the discussion. They're just trying to figure out what answer would work best to serve their purposes right now. Their discussion, their debate amongst themselves, they condemn themselves with their own debate because the truth isn't even factoring in. They're not sitting around going, well, you know, we had a discussion about this and we really honestly decided the truth does not factor anywhere into their debate, into their discussion. What you're seeing in their discussion here, deciding how to answer, is the way in which they handle John over time. In other words, it's a summary of the way they reacted to John's ministry from the beginning. They don't care about the truth. They just are trying to figure out, well, what answer best serves our purposes? You know, what's the answer that will benefit us? They didn't handle John in good faith. They're not handling Jesus in good faith. Jesus isn't obligated to give them an answer. And when they demonstrate this and they prove this and they come out with their non-answer, well, we just don't know. Never mind, these guys are supposed to be the experts at the time. These are supposed to be the authorities, the religious authorities at the time, the self-proclaimed religious authorities at the time. And the best they can come up with is, well, we're not sure. And what they're not sure of is what answer would actually serve them best. So they say, well, we're not sure, demonstrating that they're not having a good faith discussion. And Jesus' response, well, then I'm not going to tell you. You use the supposed religious experts. You can't tell me a straight answer. Then I'm not telling you. Simple as. And he moved right along. Things I love about Jesus and his ministry is he did not waste time. He moved along. Time and again, when you read the Gospels, Jesus would go to a place, and if the people wanted to hear it, he'd spend a little time and teach them something. Likewise, if he moved into a village, he showed up at a village, and these people were unbelieving, they weren't really interested, he just moved right along and stand there, wasting his time. He didn't argue. He didn't try to convince him. Now, yes, he would have debates from time to time with the Pharisees, but that wasn't to convince the Pharisees. That was to demonstrate to the crowd who had an open mind. It was to demonstrate to the crowd who these people actually were, that they were deceivers. They're not religious authorities. They're self-proclaimed religious authorities. They don't have any actual authority. They're just pumping themselves up, and he would demonstrate. Other than that, he didn't waste his time, just like right here, what we just read. He didn't waste his time trying to explain to these guys so they could try to come up with some way to use his words against him, virtue signal against him, try to bring charges, slander him. We're having all these examples of Jesus teaching the people in the Bible. And sometimes they really were into it, and he'd wind up with a massive crowd. And sometimes they would shake their heads and say, this guy's out of it, and this is a hard teaching, and they would walk around. And you never, never, not one single time in any of these stories did Jesus ever go chasing after them. Wait, come back. Let me explain what this means. In fact, oftentimes he taught in parables, and oftentimes he taught things in a way that were intentionally hard, intentionally obtuse, intentionally you had to have a mind to where you really wanted to understand it and learn it. I have no doubt if anybody came forward, oftentimes it's proven. He would say something in this manner, the people would shake their heads and just leave. They weren't really wanting to understand. They would just throw up their hands, say, yeah, okay, this guy's a nut job, and they would walk off. And he never once chased after them. He didn't go chasing after them, going, wait, don't leave. Let me explain this to you. Now, sometimes later on, when they were by themselves, his disciples would come to him and say, we don't understand what you just told those people. And Jesus would break it down then and explain it to them. Okay, look, this is what this means. This is what I'm actually saying. You know, when Jesus said, you got to eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, the people thought he was literally talking about being a cannibal. They put it into a physical, literal, definition. When he said that, they took him literally and they're like, okay, this guy's a nut job. And they laugh. We're not going to be cannibals. That's disgusting. The disciples understood that's not what he meant. But they'd be like, well, what did you mean by that? And obviously we read it. When you get into people arguing in bad faith, it says here you're supposed to eat Jesus's flesh and drink his blood. So you support cannibalism, don't you? Well, that's what he meant. Oh, now you're just trying to redefine it to mean whatever you want it to mean. Don't waste your time. I'm always amazed. Well-meaning Christians, you see well-meaning Christian believers, and they will spend so much time on pointless, trying to plant on pointless, crappy ground. I don't understand it. If you ever go by a field, sometimes you'll go by a field, and now I'm not talking about those big fields like up in Kansas and Nebraska where it's just miles and miles, and you just see nothing but just, you know, weed or whatever it is they're growing. I'm talking about that. Like if you go somewhere else where fields are a lot more spotty, you go by a field and you look at a field and you'll see a field that's been plowed up and planted. But you'll notice, like, say there's 25% of the field over on one side. They didn't plow it up. They didn't plant it. And you're like, why didn't they do that? How come they didn't just plow and plant the whole thing? It don't make any sense. What you don't know is that 25% that hadn't been plowed and planted, it's crappy ground. There's nothing there but rocks, and the soil's real thin. There's no point in plowing it and planting there because there's nothing that's going to grow. Nothing's going to grow there. You don't plow and plant that. You just plow around it and go ahead and get this good ground. And yet, so many Christians will spend all their time on that 25% of the ground scratching around in shallow dirt. They ain't never going to grow nothing. And they waste all this time and all this effort on people who have no interest in it. They're not interested. They're not asking in good faith. They're just wasting your time. They're just jerking you around. They're hoping they can make you say something that they can run around, point at, and say you're stupid and embarrass you. And they'll spend all their time over there on that shitty piece of ground. You got 75%. Good ground over here. You could be over here working, cultivating, learning yourself, and then sharing that knowledge with other people who are in good faith, trying to become more like Christ and trying to understand Jesus Christ. And instead of doing that, they're over here in the weeds. They're over here scratching around just like, if I keep at this, I can fertilize this thistle bush and turn it into a good, bountiful crop. No, it's a thistle bush. It ain't never going to be a fruit tree. It's a thistle bush. Why are you up there in the crappy, shallow ground, dicking around with these people who have no interest or understanding at all in learning and understanding the truth? You're up there scratching around in the sorry ground. Everybody else knows you got to be over here in the good ground. Got to be over here in the good ground. We read these accounts where Jesus would go into a certain town or a certain village, and it says that the people had very little faith there, and he could not do many miracles. Now, people read that, and they'll scratch their heads. What do they mean? He couldn't? You mean he literally could not do it? How come it is he went in this village, he couldn't do very many miracles because the people had little faith? And he moved on. What do you mean he couldn't? I thought he was the Son of God. Doesn't that mean he could do anything? No, it means he's not wasting his time on these people. Why is he going to show up here and perform a bunch of miracles for a bunch of people that are thick-headed? Just because people show up like they're coming to see the local circus came to town and they're going to see if this guy's going to do something entertaining. Jesus wasn't wasting his time. And you know what he did? He kept on moving. He didn't stay in that village. He didn't stay in that town. As soon as it became apparent that the ground was shallow and rocky and he would be wasting his time there, guess what? He moved right along. He just kept on trucking. He moved right along. When it became apparent that this is shallow ground here, these people don't have a heart to understand. They don't really care. They're not interested. Hello? They're not interested in understanding or learning any of this stuff or knowing about God. He didn't waste his time up there scratching around in the rocks trying to cultivate thistle bushes. When it became apparent, they don't have much faith, which means they don't have much will to understand in this context. They don't have a desire to understand. He just moved on. He didn't stay there and try to convince these people, look, let me explain this for the 678th time to you. He just looked around and said, these people are a waste of time. And he moved right along. And what do you see? Christian believers today, I see so many Christians, they'll sit there and go on and on to people that have no interest. If somebody's mocking you, and your faith and your beliefs, and they're mocking you, you're not, why are you standing there arguing with them? Brush them off like the sand off the bottom of your shoes, shrug your shoulders and say, well, that person's going to hell, and move on. Why are you waste your time? Somebody's mocking you and making fun of your beliefs, and you see people, Christian believers, they're going to sit there and try to like argue and quote scripture at them. I don't understand. You got somebody who's hostile to your beliefs, has no desire to understand it, is trying to make fun of you, is trying to, no matter what you say, they're going to look at you and call you names. And these people will respond by quoting Bible verses to them. Like that person is going to read that and go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize the Bible said that. Now I've totally changed my mind. I believe in Jesus. And wasting their time. Why? I don't understand. I don't understand. Why would you waste your time on crappy ground? Why are you going to do that? Why do you waste your time on people that are openly hostile? Or openly hostile to your beliefs? They're not coming to you because they really want to know by what authority you're teaching these things. They're coming to you because they're hoping to make a fool out of you. They're hoping to get you to say something that they can use against you. Maybe go to the authorities and say that you've done something illegal. That's what they're doing. They're not arguing. They're not asking because they really want to know. And I see people, they'll respond by quoting Bible verses at them. Like that's going to do something. As if this person just needed to hear that. And they're going to suddenly change their mind and say, well, you're right. And you look at how Jesus handled it. Well, you tell me. John's baptism, what is it? They don't even care about the truth. They're just trying to figure out what's the correct answer, not truthful answer. What's the answer that's going to benefit us? Don't mess with people. Jesus did not mess with people like that. He didn't. He just kept on moving. You think he sat around and said, oh my gosh, I got to convince these people because otherwise they're going to go into hell. No, he just brushed them off and went on somewhere else. More fertile ground. People that actually care and might actually just be ignorant and want to come to understand it. They're willing to learn. We strive to be as Christ-like as possible. That's what I said at the beginning of this discussion. Sometimes I really don't understand. You know, we're Christian believers. Base word, Christ. We are Christ-like. We strive to be Christ-like. Our whole life is that. Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. Does that mean you're taking up the burden? I always say, when you understand what judgment means, what it's like, what that is. We make the decision to do that now, to spend our entire lives going through the process of judgment. We're looking at ourselves and we're analyzing ourselves. We're constantly trying to take corrective action, which is the original plan of God, why he created man in the first place. We spend our lives, and it's a burden. It's a lot easier just to skip through life and let the time go by and then it's over, which is what most people are going to do. We take up the cross just like Jesus. We take up the burden and we decide, we make it. And this is our faith, not emotion, faith, by demonstrating by our actions. We go through this and we spend our entire lives constantly striving for something that we know we're not going to attain in this life, but we go through the process. And then we have it out of the way. That's why we're not under judgment. We're not under the law, because we're going through it now. It's not like we don't have to do it. It's just we spend our entire lives doing it. So there's no point. God ain't going to make you do it again when you leave this world, because you took up your cross. You took up the burden as being Christ-like. You took up the cross and carried it. You took up that burden and you spent your life working through these things. You're not going to leave here and have to go through it again. You already went through the process, and that's the choice we make. We strive to be as Christ-like as possible. And when you see people that do this, you know, misled Christian believers, whatever, the thing that's really profound about that is this tells you that they don't even know. They don't even know who Jesus is, because Jesus didn't act like that. You know, Jesus... He that's not what he did. He didn't waste his time on people who obviously don't actually have any interest in learning the truth. We're supposed to be like him. If he didn't act like that, then we're not supposed to be. We're not supposed to be acting like that. Remember years ago, several years ago, I has more years than I remember. The time goes by too fast for me because I'm getting old. But remember the whole, WWJD, people had it on their bracelets, you know, they'd make these bracelets, have t-shirts, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And it was a fad, it was a fashion fad. People go around with these bracelets so that they could look at it. If they were in a situation, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And sadly, apparently a whole lot of these people have no idea. I have no idea what Jesus would do. They don't know when Jesus is moving along. They don't know when Jesus would stop and bother teaching people. They don't know when Jesus would make up a whip and start turning over tables and kicking people's asses. I have no idea. WWJD, what would Jesus do? And most of these people have no clue what Jesus would do. And I find that somewhat astounding, because we have whole books. You know, we have the Gospels that were firsthand accounts of what Jesus actually did. And if you read through them enough times, you start understanding more and more of what he did do, the way he handled situations and his attitude and when he bothered teaching, when he didn't, when he moved on, when he got angry, and so on and so forth. Again, at the end of the day, we're supposed to try to be... And not as we grow, if we're growing properly spiritually, we should be becoming more Christ-like as possible. Which means we do things the way he did, more in the manner in which he did these things. And as we've read here today, he didn't waste his time trying to convince people who do not have who are not trying to come to the faith, who are not approaching in good faith, and waste his time on people and bad faith arguments. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. Hope you enjoyed the whole show. I really appreciate y'all stopping by. If you're new, I hope you'll become a regular member of the congregation. There's no paperwork. You just show back up. And all of you choose to come back every week. Again, I really do appreciate y'all. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.